James Babel. James is the executive director and co-founder of the Bear Clan. Please welcome James Babel to the stage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am James Fabel. I'm the executive director of Bear Clan Patrol, Inc., and I would like to thank you for inviting me to be here with you this afternoon. Just for the record, public speaking is not where I shine. I'm more of a practical applications kind of guy, so please bear with me. No pun intended. I'd like to start today by referencing a date that I'll never forget, a date that changed my life and the lives of those around me, a date that had a profound impact on our nation, a date that brought about an awakening. I'm talking about the 17th of August, 2014, the day they found Tina Fontaine's body in our Red River. That was the last straw for me, for my family, and my community. That was the last indignity we would suffer without an appropriate response. Our response was to be Bear Clan Patrol. Bear Clan Patrol was originally formed in 1992 in response to violence against women. It was said back in the day that you could punch a hole in a storefront window on Selkirk Avenue and the police would be there about 4 or 5 minutes, but you could hit your partner and the police may or may not show up at all. So Bear Clan was originally formed to fill that void. The patrols ran from 92 to 95. At their peak, they had 200 volunteers. The patrols were done primarily on weekends in vehicles. At one point, it turned into a workers' co-op and they started to do security for pay. At that point, the patrols kind of became secondary and there was a few departures in 1995 that led to the program being shuttered. And it went into hibernation for most of the next 20 years. Sadly, this new incarnation of Bear Clan Patrol was once again formed in direct response to violence, in direct response to the frustration over the status quo. For me personally, my family and my community, the death of Tina Fontaine was a turning point. The disrespect, the level of violence, and the systemic failures to protect this young child really did force a response. It was time, at a community level, to step up and take back the responsibility of protecting ourselves. If we wanted to live better, in a better community, it was going to take an investment, and it had to start with us here in the community. We were going to live that whole be the change you want to see philosophy. One of the things that I've come to understand in my lifetime is that you cannot impose healing on a community. It has to be self-initiated. And I myself am a North End resident, and I live on Stella between Mackenzie and McGregor, and I see it every day, and that's one of the reasons why I got so motivated to do something about it. Today's Bear Clan Patrol is a community-based, volunteer-driven safety patrol. Our mandate is to protect and empower the women, children, elderly, and vulnerable members of our community. We do this non-violently, without judgment, and in harmony with the communities that we serve. We are not trying to replace the police. Our purpose is to reduce the need for their presence. We do this by being a consistent presence in the community. Our goal is to de-escalate critical incidents before they become a police matter. We don't chase down gang members or drug dealers. We build relationships. We tend to the addicted and the injured. When we first started up, we operated exclusively in the north end of Winnipeg. Winnipeg is home to the largest urban indigenous population in North America, fifth largest in the world, in excess of 95,000 members and growing rapidly. That population, myself included, find ourselves concentrated largely within the inner city, where poverty, addiction, homelessness, exploitation, poor housing stock, a near zero vacancy rate, and skyrocketing rents all exist. Then there is the social safety net that has failed to keep up with the real cost of living for those that rely on their services. I mean, can you imagine trying to meet your daily dietary requirements on a little more than $3 a day? Did you know that most of the child apprehension that goes on in our community is poverty related and not related to abuse or neglect. In the child welfare system, our children have a dollar value of better than $170 per day. And so long as the destruction of our families is incentivized through the child welfare system, and by that I mean specifically that the CFS is happy to pay a stranger upwards of $1,000 a month to foster a child in Manitoba, but they would never pay that kind of money to keep families unified. These and many other issues make for very hard living in the inner city. When we first started up, we were 12 members sitting around a boardroom table on Selkirk Avenue. 12 like-minded people, all with different gifts throwing in together for a common goal. We had a budget of $900 and you know, we didn't have any overhead really, and it was a good way to get started. We didn't ask for permission, we didn't wait for funding, We just got the business. You may wonder why we didn't choose other options like COP program or Neighborhood Watch that come with all kinds of supports. The bottom line is that the state does the vetting for those programs, and there is a criminal record component that disqualifies persons with a criminal record. I myself am a 4 times convicted felon. I wouldn't have been able to participate, and likewise a disproportionate amount of my community members. We are 70% Indigenous in the North End. We are convicted or incarcerated at much higher rates, and so we wanted a program that was going to allow us to work more freely with our community members. Here at Bear Clan, a criminal record does not automatically disqualify you from participation. We value lived experience. We do, however, have certain standards. We won't work with people convicted of or known to be violent towards women. And we also can't work with anyone with a history of sexual violence of any kind. Beyond that, if there's time and distance, if there's time and distance between a person and their crimes, if they've made a conscious decision to move forward in their lives in a good way, contribute, to give back to their community, why would we stand in the way of that? We are trying to undo the effects of marginalization on our community members. We are trying to help every member of our community develop a stakeholder mentality, because hopelessness is chased away by empowerment. I'd like to share with you a little bit about the evolution of Bear Clan as I know it. Starting on September 19, 2014, it took us about 10 months to build the infrastructure that has become Bear Clan Patrol we know today. I'm talking about policy procedures, governance documents, bylaws, constitution, financial policy, all that kind of fun stuff. But now that hard work is done, when another community wants to adopt the model, with the appropriate supports in place, they can be up and running as little as 6 weeks. And evidence to that is that we have expanded to include nearly 48 communities nationwide, from Montreal to East Hastings, Vancouver, and up into Wet'suwet'en territory. That growth has come mostly in the last 24 months. I mean, it was June of 2016, we had 100 volunteers and we're still working just in the north end of Winnipeg, and now we're just all over. It's crazy. Today we have 1,500 Winnipeg-based volunteers, and we've recently expanded into West End and West Broadway. So we're doing patrols now 5 nights a week in the north end, 3 nights a week in West End, and 2 nights a week in West Broadway. On Friday nights, we have 3 patrols running simultaneously in 3 different communities, and it's a whole lot of work, but it's a lot of fun to do. We've helped other communities here in Winnipeg start their own safety patrols, like the 204 Neighborhood Watch Group, a group organized by the Filipino community in the Maples. We've also helped to establish patrols at both IRCOM sites and the Centennial community. All of these groups started with a motivated community and a copy of our policy procedures and governance documents that we provided freely. I've been to many First Nations communities here in Manitoba and across Canada. I've flown out to Thunder Bay, Lethbridge, Nelson, BC, up north, all to share the program. We've had interested visitors from Australia, Europe, Japan, and most recently I've been invited to present at a conference about night patrols in Australia. So I'm looking forward to heading to Australia in October. I guess my point is that we are not alone in wanting to live better than we have been or being willing to step up and do something about it. Complacency is just not getting it done. Now is the time for bold action, and bold action is being taken. I'd like to talk a little bit about the evolution of the patrols. And it wasn't easy in the beginning. In June of 2015, we figured we had a workable model and we embarked on our first patrol. We quickly found out that we were making some mistakes. There were things we hadn't considered, preparations we simply failed to make. So we took a step back, looked at it again, tightened up a few loose ends. We determined, our volunteers should likely be 18 years of older of age or older, and that you probably shouldn't be doing it in flip-flops because of the things we come across. These kinds of housekeeping stuff. On the 16th of July, 2015, we stepped out once again, but this time with a commitment. And we committed to being there 4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday, every week. And we have lived up to that commitment ever since. In June of 2016, volunteers decided they wanted to do Wednesdays as well. And it was funny, my little cousin was badgering me for weeks to try to get us to do patrols on Wednesday because they didn't like to wait 3 days to come back and do it again. And I finally relented and said, okay, we'll do Wednesday patrols. His work schedule changed immediately, and of course he wasn't able to do it anymore. But anyway, we've been doing that ever since. Once we commit to something, we stay to it, right? Yeah. So now from there on, we were doing patrols 5 days a week. And then in August of 2016, we started doing youth mock patrols every other Tuesday. Youth mock patrols are meant to engage our youth. When we first got started, working with our youth was one of the biggest, plans that we had, because we want to change their path so they don't fall into the trouble that most of the rest of us have. Unfortunately, when we got incorporated, insurance made it so that we couldn't interact with our youth in the way that we wanted to, and so we had to find a way around that. As it happens, one of my guys worked for Seven Oaks School Division Wayfinders Program. These are kids that come down from the north and educate here in the south. Their parents all sign permission slips and waivers and things like that, and so the liability is borne by that organization. We didn't have to worry about that. As soon as we figured that out, we started exploiting the heck out of that, and now we have groups of kids coming from all over the place. Yeah. And so now we've been running those patrols ever since August of 2016, and it's really growing, and they're actually doing it in other jurisdictions. One of our chapters in Regina, the White Pony Lodge, has been doing it. Our West Broadway group is doing it as well, so it's really taken hold. This last summer, our volunteers wanted to do late night patrols. Normally our patrols go from 6 to 9. On Fridays and Saturdays now in the summertime, we go from 9 till 12 as well. So we go from 6 till 9, go back with a new group, we go back out again from 9 till 12. It's really very rewarding to see that kind of growth. And again, this is all volunteer driven. I don't dictate to my volunteers that, hey, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. It's them badgering me to do what they want to do, and I finally relent and say, okay, but that's how we work. So now we're doing 11 and 12 patrols in three communities weekly, averaging about 20 volunteers per shift. I think our first year we did like 13,000 hours of service. Last year we did better than 30,000 hours of service, and I expect this year it'll be even higher than that with our expansion in the West End. And all of that is not including the extra outings we do, parades, all the different events we attend and things like that. This year with the new West End and West Broadway patrols, yeah, I expect to do more than 35,000 hours of service. We don't stop for holidays, hot days, cold or rain. Lightning, on the other hand, is the only thing we don't work with, because nobody wants to get lit up. So, in the face of severe summer storms, we have on occasion canceled patrols. And last winter, we actually, because we have our new space open, we canceled some of our patrols on the super cold nights. But we have a place for people to come instead. So, yeah. Outside of that, though, we are like the postman. You can count on us. Except we don't bring mail. Never. Of course, in the beginning, attracting volunteers was a challenge. There were plenty of nights where I was the only one from the community out. We would go out sometimes, there would only be four or five of us, and it was scary. We didn't know how the police was going to respond to us. We didn't know how the community was going to respond to us, but we just kept at it, just kind of hoping that things would fall into place. One thing I noticed early on is that nearly our entire volunteer base came from outside of the community. There was a real reluctance from community members to come out and participate for fear that they would have a negative interaction while in the company of the group, with the community member, and then have to face that community member on their own the next day and be victim of some kind of retaliation. Thankfully, we've been able to largely dispel that myth, and there's been no violent acts directed at us whatsoever when we've been on our regular patrols. There was that incident on the bus last winter where one of our members was stabbed. He was off duty, and we didn't train him to do that, but it demonstrates the type of people that we attract, though, that are selfless, caring people that won't stand for that kind of bullying. So, and with the help of community partners, we were able to provide, I think in 2017, we provided about 20 tons of produce and baked goods directly into our community. Last year, we did 62.5 tons of produce and baked goods that we were able to deliver directly into our community. This year, I'm forecasting more like 100 tons. Poverty alleviation has become one of the focuses of mine. I recognize that the blinding poverty that we're experiencing in our community really does lead to a lot of aberrance and pain and suffering. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm, I think in 2017, we did $35,000 in temporary work placements. Last year, we did $90,000 in temporary work placements. Poverty alleviation has to be part of whatever strategy we're going to employ if we're going to see any positive gains made in our community. They invited me out to Ottawa in December of last year to talk about the meth epidemic that's been going on in our community. And I went out there and they gave me my 6.5 minutes and I took my time and I spoke my piece and I talked about how poverty alleviation needs to be part of the strategy. Treatment beds are fantastic, recovery centers are fantastic, but if they're going to go through those organizations, those centers, and be certified healthy and then put back into the same poverty that they came out of that led them into the addiction in the first place, you're going to have relapses like crazy. And so that's why, again, I've been pushing now for poverty alleviation. We regularly get donations of clothing that we in turn donate out into the community. We have, in times of crisis, been there to support our community, and now there are plenty of nights where the patrols are made up entirely of community members. We are considered an ally in the community. That, to me, is a victory in and of itself. Community engagement has always been the goal, to reconnect whatever disconnect that exists between humanity that sees community members walk right by a person in crisis without offering some form of assistance. And on that note, I'd like to share a story with you. When we first started out, I was coming home one night, and as I've stated earlier, I live on Stella between McKenzie and McGregor. So I was coming on Selkirk Avenue, turned south onto McGregor, and there's a little dentist office right there. And it was April, it was still chilly out, it had been raining earlier in the day. And when I turned the corner, I look, and there was a young woman laying in the fetal position with her back to the road, no visible belongings, backless jacket, no shoes, no jacket, no purse. And I recognized that didn't look right. So I turned my car around and I went back to check on her. And I got out of my car and I asked her, I said, are you okay? And she goes, no, I'm not. I said, what's the matter? She goes, I was robbed. They beat me up. They took all my stuff. I said, oh, no, So I called 911 and I called my group that was just gathering down the street and I invited them to come join us for support. While we were waiting for the groups to show up, I asked her, I said, how long have you been here? She said, I've been here for an hour. In the heat of rush hour traffic in our community, with cars, trucks and buses and pedestrians all over the place, not one person checked on this young woman's well-being. And that's the disconnect that we've been working very hard to overcome. Oh yeah, right, here we go. Sorry. Yeah, so I am seeing changes now. I know that the recent crime stats paint an ugly picture. Property crime is up, violent crime is up, IV drug use has reached epidemic proportions. And we have seen more than a tenfold increase in IV drug use year over year. Our first year, we found 18 syringes from June to November. In the wintertime, there was a real decline in any, there was no recoveries at all. The next year, we found 300. The year after that, we found 4,000. Last year, we recovered 40,000 used syringes in our community. Last year, we did not see the decline in needle recovery in the winter like we normally do, because it's just so pervasive. This year, I gave this speech a week ago, and I was saying that we picked up already 21,000 syringes this year, the first quarter. We did a needle drop last week that was 21,000. So we are over 40,000 used syringes recovered already this year. That represents a huge amount of pain and suffering in our community. And I really hope that that we can find those mental health supports, that we can overcome the poverty that's feeding this addiction process. And that's one of the reasons why we work so hard. Yeah, so those are not happy statistics. That's part of the reason why we keep expanding our patrols. The need just keeps growing. The community is, however, becoming engaged. People are talking to one another, and now they have an ally in the community in Bear Clan Patrol. Real relationships are being developed. Our role in the community is becoming clearer. I mean, when we first started out, we had a very narrow focus. In the wake of what happened with Tina Fontaine, John Traffic was the enemy. And we went out with pens, papers, and flashlights, and pockets full of condoms. But once you get out there, you quickly realize that there's so much more going on. We become counselor on the fly, mentor, first responder, and janitor. We bring bags of food, apples, oranges, bananas, granola bars, fruit snacks, and sometimes candies for the kids. We now carry naloxone, the anti-overdose drug, first aid kits. We also have artificial external defibrillators for all of our communities that we patrol. And we are trained in tactical communication, dementia awareness, first aid, CPR, suicide assist, and training opportunities are many and ongoing, and all of them are provided free to our volunteers. We have been connecting people with resources. Last winter, I connected one of our local homeless men with the Doorways Project. They specialize in housing people with issues related to housing. He is housed currently. He still abuses solvents, but I know I won't find him dead underneath one of my bridges. And I feel really good to be part of that solution. And we do serve a marginalized community for sure. And many of our most dedicated volunteers are themselves marginalized. And that lends to our credibility, I believe, within the community. Now the benefits of being part of Bear Clan Patrol are real and tangible. The way the children respond to us is amazing. They come running from all directions because they know we will have food. The parents too, even the young kids in gangster attire on occasion will come to us for food. We've taken weapons big and small off the streets. Our first year in operation, we took 19 bags of meth off the street. And that number has been steadily increasing as the time goes on. Last year, we recovered 47 grams of meth and meth-related products off of our streets. More than 1,000 prescription drugs, tablets were taken off the street. And again, none of these things, like, we are non-violent, non-confrontational, so none of these things were taken from anyone. These were things that were dropped on the ground, and we were lucky enough to be the ones to recover it. And all of these things were turned over to the Winnipeg Police and destroyed. Yeah, when I think back to some of our successes, I remember a night in August of 2015 when we sent 6 children under the age of 16 to hospital for overconsumption. I think about the Dufferin Fire and the donation drive we hosted that saw to the needs of the 7 affected families, 29 people, 17 children and 12 adults. And then at the end with the surplus donations, we held a 2-day free giveaway attended by some 450 people where we literally gave away a 53-foot truckload of furniture, housewares, clothing, bedding, all that kind of stuff. But our greatest success is and will likely always be the night we stopped the exploitation of a minor female. This incarnation of Bear Clan was formed in response to Tina Fontaine. Young Tina was lured into prostitution by people she trusted, people she considered friends, people that smiled at her while they heard her. One night in October of 2015, we came across 3 young women. And when we first started out, I went out and I had these black shirts with the Bear Clan logo made. And I know they look really fantastic, but of course in October when you have to put a jacket on, they become completely useless. So that's how we ended up with those fancy high-vis vests you guys all see. And so we were coming into the Lord Salka Park developments one night in October, and there was 3 young women. They were headed out, and they'd never seen us before, especially not in those vests. So they stopped to ask us, you know, what our purpose was and what we were doing. And we only spoke to them for about 90 seconds. One of the young girls, I guess, they, you know, when she was satisfied with what she heard, she turned around and started walking away, and the young girl followed her. One of the other older girls stayed with me and she started crying. And I said, "What's the matter?" She goes, "I don't want to go with them. They're going to do something bad. That girl's only 13. And we're not the police. We're not their parents. And they didn't have to, but for whatever reason, when I called them back, they came back to us. There was an altercation between the 2 older girls. You know, why'd you wrap me up? Why'd you have to say anything?" And the one older girl, she took off running. The younger girl went running back into the developments. And the one girl that stayed with me, we were able to ascertain after the fact that it was the intention of that one older girl to take that young child and sell her to a 23-year-old male friend of theirs, and that's where they were headed at that moment. And that's one of the things that really galvanized our efforts. You know, you can have that impact in your community just by paying attention to what's going on around you, by listening to people that are talking to you, and engaging and doing something. You can really change the path of somebody's life. I still see that young girl in our community. She still is with her nana there in the Lord Salka Park developments. She's not street involved. She's not drug addicted. She's a happy, well-adjusted teenager. And I take pride in that we were part of that. We are the boots on the ground. We are the direct action our nation has been crying out for. It didn't take millions of dollars. It didn't take years-long studies. It took good people joining together, stepping out of their comfort zones and bringing light into those dark corners others fear. Evil can only survive because good people do nothing. I implore you all, do something. Thank you. Any more questions?
Powerful. I want to thank you very much. Before we thank you officially, James has agreed to take some questions, so I think we have time for maybe two or something. So if there's anybody in the audience who would like to ask a question, just put up your hand.
Makes my life easy. Oh, come on. Yes. So last year and the year before, the Red Cross uses us in surge capacity when the fires up in Island Lake, fires in Pangasi and Little Grand, when the evacuees come down, we were hired literally to police the security companies that were hired to attend to them because there was a lot of abuses going on. And so, you know, it seems kind of ridiculous that they would pay us upwards of $50,000 to police the security companies that they hired, but that was actually what happened. And then we get we did filming for Burden of Truth, and so all of our volunteers that participated were paid for that work, things like that. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any major sponsors?
We have a few. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't hear that.
No, can you repeat her question for me?
She's wondering what the question was.
Oh, if we had any major sponsors. Yes. Greg Hansen from, he was formerly the president of Wamanisa Life. He was one of our biggest supporters so far. Yeah. And right now the province, the city, and our federal government have taken care of us a little bit. So we're doing okay. Yes, sir. Coast to coast, I couldn't tell you. We're 1,500 Winnipeg based, probably upwards of 3,500 nationwide, but that's a guess. Yes, sir.
Just want to start by saying thank you. There's so many good things about living in this city, in this province. And you know, whenever I travel, speak proudly. One of the things that makes me proud to live here is the work that you guys are doing.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm sure. Yeah.
Such a, not only inspirational, but it's a move to action, as you said, kind of act.
Yeah.
My question is, of your volunteers, is it fair to say that most of them would be males, or do you have a mix
no.
of females as well?
No, anyone from 18 to 80 is welcome, and we are very diverse. I mean, we are based on the Indigenous clan system, and we are Indigenous-led, but we are not selective in or exclusive in either who serves with us or who we serve. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
The new area that you go and do patrol, we have volunteers as well from their area, like West Broadway and...
Yes, exactly. One of the reasons why it took us so long to get into those other communities is because we had to have the community buy in. As I said, you can't impose healing on a community. It has to be self-initiated. So we had to have the interest from the community before we would go there. Just on the 3rd of April, we started into Central Park area as well, because now we have volunteers that are in that area, and so we're comfortable going into that area. We've been badgered by, you know, mayor and the police to go into that area sooner, but because we didn't have the buy-in, it just wasn't feasible, and so we had to wait. And our volunteers literally come from all over the city. And again, if it wasn't for the, you know, the support of the wider community, we really wouldn't ever have gotten started. Yeah. So, yes, ma'am.
Hi, James.
How are you?
I'm good. How did you get buy-in from the community?
Sorry? I guess they'd seen enough of us, you know, that it sort of became attractive to them, and so the people just started asking for it. We were invited into the West End in 2016. We went and had a big community barbecue there and introduced ourselves, but then it kind of fell flat. But you know, after that, it just sort of, there was a reawakening, I suppose, and people started coming after us to get out there. And again, we have volunteers that are there now. And so it was just a no-brainer, yeah. Yes, sir.
Can you say something about how your interaction is with the police and how that is developing developing?
In the beginning, the police weren't precisely our ally. They were, you know, they were wondering who we were and what we were about and what our plans were, you know, whether we were going to be some vigilante group or things like that. So it took a while for them to warm up to us. We really had to demonstrate by our actions that we were not crazy and, trying to, you know, bully people and things like that. But as it stands, Devon Clunis, our former chief of police, is on our board of directors. The police officer that arrested me in 2002 is now my board chair. Come full circle in that relationship. Yeah. And we have a very healthy working relationship with the Winnipeg Police. Again, we are not trying to replace the police. We are trying to reduce the need for their service. We want to see less of our community members going away in handcuffs because of criminality. We want to see less of our community members going away in ambulance because of violence. And we want to see less of our children being caught up in the CFS system. So whenever possible, we de-escalate things. When it's not possible, we turn it over to the Winnipeg Police. When we first started out, I tried to have a rigid schedule where I had people, you know, Thursday night I want you here, Friday night I want you here. I noticed right away that people would miss their shift, they would feel guilty, and then they would stop coming entirely. So we work on a drop-in basis. You show up when you can. When you can't, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to call in sick or anything like that. You just don't show. We never know how many people we're going to get, but we always know people are going to come. And so that's how we do things, just on a drop-in basis. Whenever you feel motivated, just show up.